views and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at kfarradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you have a call in for our guest, Nick Nugent, it's a Wednesday. We're at 907-458-TALK. That is 907-458-8255. It's the second Wednesday of the month. On a Wednesday, we look at pioneer, local legend, longtime Fairbanksan, nefarious character. Mr. Nugent, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well, Dave.
You know, there's no political commercials on today.
No, that's been kind of an odd thing.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how to... I have to get my bearings. I have to get my bearings back on the radio.
Maybe we should talk slow for a while to make up for the extra time.
Well, they gave us more news. You can see them already doing it. We got more news this morning. What the heck? But you have chose not one of the most well-known people in Alaskan folklore and history, but a person who did a lot anyway.
He did. We're looking at John Bremner, mm-hmm. and John basically would be known to Alaskans that have read the book Sourdough Sagas.
Yep.
There's an account of his death in there. And if you know any, have read much about Lieutenant Allen's expedition, which of course we covered quite a while ago.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how they get up here at what stage of their life. And he came up later in life.
He did. He was probably around 50 when he got here. And in fact, a number of the accounts always referred to him as Old John.
Yeah. You know, usually they're up here, you know, 22 to 32, maybe 35 at the latest. But he came up in his 50s before there was the Klondike. When did he get up here? Or just start from the beginning with this gentleman, the Scottish fellow.
Yeah, around 1884. But Bremner, John Bremner II, was the son of John Bremner. He was born in Rainy, Scotland on December 25th, 1833. It's not known when his family came to the U.S., but there is an 1850 census record of a family of Bremners with all the proper names and ages for the children living in Kensington, New Hampshire. Later, they moved to Iowa. Bremner left his wife and family around 1865 for a life of adventure. His children ended up having to be placed with relatives, and other matchable records I wasn't able to find.
That was a weird thing about it. He just gave up the family.
He did. He just decided to walk, apparently. And
I'm done. I'm out of here. And here you go.
A Scottish member has written a history of the Bremner family, and there's a good section on John in there, what they could find.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that he doesn't even make a guess at. Why did he just give up and leave his family?
Yeah.
So it's probable that he became a sailor, because in his journal he speaks of seeing the Negroes of Africa and the natives of Australia. So he'd been around the world, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
20 years had elapsed from the time he left Iowa and his reappearing as an old man of 52 in a written record. How he arrived in Alaska is not recorded, but he was here and had made his way to the Copper River, to the village of Tarl, by 1884. During this time, he kept a journal, the time he was at Tarl. Now, Bremner had lost the journal, but someone had put it in a U.S. mail bag and taken it to Nunchuk. And there it was discovered by Carr, who was an English nobleman, and an explorer. We'll cover him in the future. He tried one of the first climbs of Mount St. Elias, and he'll be an interesting character, I think, in its own. So he found the journal, and actually—
Where's Nunchuk at?
Nunchuk is on Hinchinbrook Island.
Okay. Wow.
The Russians called it Fort Constantine.
Okay.
They liked being on Hinchinbrook because it gave them a little bit of buffer from being raided by some of the more aggressive native groups in the area. And yet a lot of groups, you know, throughout Prince William Sound could come there for trading.
Okay.
So Fort Constantine then is where he had been. Nunchuk was the name of the trading post after the Russians left. It was built then actually in the 1860s. So it was had been around for a while.
Then he joins up with one of our previous people we discussed.
Yes, and that takes a while.
Yeah,
but so what he does is he... Carr, who found the journal, had actually was in the state to climb Mount St. Elias, and he had Frederick Schwatka in his party. That's how his party basically got funding, by taking Schwatka along. Well, it turns out Schwatka had had some health issues, wasn't able to climb the mountain. So when we cover Carr's story, we can get into that a little bit better. Well, by September of that year, 1884, Bremner was living at Tarl, which is the site of Chitna, as we know it today, among the Otna people, and they were misidentified as Matanuskis, the Russian word for people from the Matanuska Cook Inlet area. And they that was fairly common. We find out Allen did the same thing. People at that time thought that the Copper River was so hard to come up and down that the natives in that in the area, from say Copper Center to Chitna, must have surely come from the Matanuska Valley. And, you know, that just isn't the case. Well, the time then that he spends, he overwinters, and he apparently was the first white man to do so. There's no records of Russians overwintering in the northern parts of the Copper River. So Bremner was a first there. Came up by himself. He actually had some native guides who helped him come up. He found out when he got there that the natives were rather obstructive, a little bit like the Tlingit. They had a pretty good monopoly on trade going through their area, so they were always a bit suspicious of anyone else coming. One of the things we find out, they pilfered so much over at Nunchuk that the traders actually hired Aleut guards to watch everything and try to keep it going. So you know, they had a trade going. They were the sort of the rich guys of the block, and they believed that what came to them was theirs. Well,
and it was their land, and they would decide what was theirs.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the things that we find out from Lieutenant Allen's journal is that the natives here at Tarl had actually built weirs across the Copper River north of Tarl so that salmon could not go farther up, because that gave them more of a stranglehold over their neighbors to the north because they had the food source.
Oh, so much for our rural preference in Alaska.
Exactly. Well, they were in fact the Otna people, so people from down farther south and the southern end of the Copper River, Cordova, and southeast to Yakutat. They had great harvests of salmon. This year they appear to have not done so well, and they were in desperate straits. Well, Bremner then had ascended the Copper River, and this is coming out of Bremner's diary, journal. Bremner had a very unusual way of spelling. He spelt everything phonetically, but he apparently must not have spoke English like anyone else you know. His journal is really hard to interpret.
Well, it was probably, you know, brogue Scottish.
That's very likely quite a bit of it.
You know, think of his background, where he came from. And then, you know, he comes into Iowa, but he doesn't really stay that long.
No.
Then he goes off and is sailing around the world for 20 years,
On board ship, he would have had any number of accents and languages, so you wouldn't necessarily match one.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 907-458-TALK. That is 907-458-8255. 458-8255, and you will not hear a political commercial. I promise you that.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Save now on Firestone Tires at GCR. Receive your Visa prepaid card of up to $110 when you buy a set of four eligible Firestone tires, like Firestone Destination for solid on- and off-road performance for your light truck or SUV. Firehawk Models deliver superb highway handling for your car. Submit your rebate online. Firestone mails you your Visa prepaid card. Shop now. Offer ends November 15th. Details at GCR Tires and Service. The Tire Guys, taming the Alaskan Road, Van Horn at Cushman.
The holiday foods, oh, so very good and time-consuming to prepare. Make it a merrier holiday season by reserving your smoked turkey or ham from Big Daddy's. Smoked turkey is just $15 per pound, and smoked ham is only $8 per pound. You'll get your heating instructions when you pick it up. It just can't be any easier or more delicious this holiday season. The last day to order is November 12th, so call Big Daddy's today to order your holiday turkey or ham. Big Daddy's, 907-452-2501.
With prices of everything on the rise, we're all looking for a great buy. Stop by Denali Industrial and check out the Fall Milwaukee Tool Sale. Milwaukee Tools means power, quality, innovation, and durability. And Denali Industrial Supply is your headquarters for all Milwaukee tools. Customer service is always our top priority at Denali Industrial Supply. So come by and talk to our knowledgeable sales staff to find the Milwaukee tools you need at the prices you'll love.
Denali Industrial Supply, 1499 Van Horn Road. Look for the big red roof.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
Overcast skies today with a chance for snow. High temperatures reach up to 23. Easterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy tonight, chance of snow 14. Overcast tomorrow, snow likely, highs level off around 21. About an inch of snow tonight through tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent in the studio with me here, and it's our Wednesday history presentation of Alaska, Fairbanks, the area. You found an interesting gentleman. I mean, this guy, you know, started late, never made it big, but sort of was involved in everything in the beginning.
He was. He went a lot of places. He crossed paths with a number of famous people.
That we've discussed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's one of the reasons I picked Bremner, because I keep seeing him just sort of
peripherally here and there.
Yeah. Loosely referred to. Well, he started out and started his journal. He came up with 300 pounds of moose meat and other supplies to include the typical flour, sugar, tea. He started up with two packers to help in a boat. They were coming up the Copper River, and he started his journal, which he named Living Among the Enemy, which kind of shows how he felt by the end of his winter.
Yeah.
And the diary entry start on September 1st, 1884, and run to February 7th, 1885, with an undated addendum that are just more or less general facts. One of the things that's interesting about Bremner, Allen credits him with giving Allen a lot of information about the winters in the Copper River, which, of course, Allen wasn't there in the winter, but Bremner was able to put a lot of information that he included in his report. Some good observations on moving troops in the winter, even. Well, he is an atrocious speller, as I mentioned, uses place names unknown to us today to give you... and names for people unknown to us. To give you an idea of some of his spelling, when I was first reading through this, in one spot he's talking about someone had stolen his mouse meat, M-O-U-S-E. I thought, holy smokes, he was in desperate straits
moose
if he
meat.
Was eating
yes.
rice, and it was moose. That's how he spelled moose.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So I ended up not feeling just exactly as far.
That's a lot of mice to steal.
That would be true. Well, the first entry then was made while they're still on the Copper River headed to Tarl, and the passage was tough. It was tough coming through the flats. It wasn't easy getting through Wood Canyon. They finally got to Tarl on the 3rd of October and started to set up camp. And that's where Bremner decided to stay because his packers wanted to move him and a small amount of supplies on to one of their villages. And he was pretty sure that there would be only those supplies left by the time he got back.
Yeah.
So he refused to go. And he said they were hard to convince until he showed them that a revolver had 6 shots. So John was, you know, I guess Scottish.
Yeah, he's Scottish.
Scottish temper there came up a bit. Yeah. Well, he, down on the 5th, he'd been alone for a while and stuck in camp for a few days due to heavy rain. Over the next several days, he hunted a lot of ducks and had a little .22, and, you know, the ducks weren't afraid of much at the range he could pick them off. So he was doing actually pretty well in the early part of the year for food. Wood Canyon then had been moved through. So on the 25th, he was pretty well, by September, he was well settled into Tarl at that point. And he writes that the Copper River is one hell of a river and no good as a transportation route, especially for troops. And, of course, later with steamboats, there were some that could make it all the way to Chitna, but it was there were upper and lower river boats. They did during the building of the railroad. They did all they could to stay out of the canyon. He estimates that Tarl was 47 days travel from Nunchuk. So think of Hinchinbrook to Chitna took 47 days to travel with the conditions they had then. Very slow progress. Tarl at that time was described as 2 houses and about 45 inhabitants. But he did mention it had some of the best spruce timber so far. So he spent some time drying his equipment. He was planning a trip to the Chitna, which he had always wanted to go. He had been given a piece of native copper and one of the natives. And he thought, well, you know, I need to find out where this came from. But he needed some guides to help him get up the copper, and, or the, I'm sorry, the Chitna, and know where he was. Well, the food source begins to dry up. Fish are gone by this time. The ducks have gone south. And on the 29th, he began building a cabin. The natives had scattered out to their winter quarters, and he thought it was odd that they scattered so much until he found out that basically the source of food for the rest of the winter was going to be rabbits and the occasional grouse that came along. And he kind of realized, well, yeah, there is such a scarcity of food here. Once all the dried fish is gone,
it's over.
You can't have very many people in one spot.
Yeah.
The river began to get cold in October. It had ice jams, and he said that the river would rise and fall by as much as 10 feet as the ice jammed in the canyon and then broke loose.
Wow.
The weather temperatures moderated on the 14th of October when heavy snow started. John describes that the here some of the habits of his neighbors. He was wondering how to make his food go longer, and he said that he couldn't quite get to the point like his native neighbors did, of simply pulling the skin off a rabbit and throwing the whole thing into the pot. That was, and, you know, for a Scotsman in Haggis, that's a pretty hard distinction.
Yeah.
So the times were tough. He notes that all the women used snuff as much as possible and would always be coming by to try to get snuff from him. 3 of the dogs slipped on the ice and went under the water and drowned. That was, you know, kind of set off a great time of mourning because the dogs were very valuable to their owners.
Yeah.
He writes that the weather started turning cold again, this still being in October. And he was given that piece of copper by a native from Chitna area. Well, he hoped to prospect then where it was from, but the cold became enough that it says his floor was frozen 2 feet away from the fire, and the frost had chimney just 3 feet above. So basically, you were almost setting in the fire. You'd be like a rotisserie. You'd have to turn every so often to stay warm.
Oh, my goodness.
Not much better than a campfire in some ways. But in the cold, clear sky, he saw the volcano, Mount Wrangell, which was easily visible. The locals told him it was several days away. The journal falls quiet for a couple of weeks, and when he returns, he tells a story about having tried to reach the crater of the volcano, but being turned back when a snowshoe broke. And with the snow and so forth, he mentions that he almost cashed his checks. He was in quite a bit of trouble, froze some fingers and an ear. And he mentions that the side of his ears, he looked like a government's mule. They were swollen up so big.
Oh, boy.
Well, he went along then.
And he's by himself out in the middle of nowhere.
He is, totally alone. He mentions that the 45 natives spread out along an area almost 45 miles long, so barely two per mile. Well, John believed the group, all told, was about 100 members and in that area. Further up the river were a group of natives that I have tried and tried to figure out who he was talking about, and he called them the Colchina, or possibly Colchina. I can't kind of rectify that with any current name. So they traded with the Chilcats, though. They went around the White River, and it took them 2 months to go to wherever, to Port Chilcat, and trade with the natives there, and then come back. They would take furs and items from the interior and trade them for fish and items from the coast. Well, November then moderated quite a bit, and he was able to get out around and do more. He mentions that most of the month he could get around in his shirt sleeves, and it had rained often. A December 4th entry, he notes some of the harshness of life for the inhabitants. The old chief of the area, well, and as Bremner says in his journal, he had become unable to feed the hungry devils who sponge off of him all the time and was removed from the position of chief. So, kind of a jaundiced view of how the politics there were.
Feed us or you're gone.
Yeah, pretty much.
It sounds like our present-day politics.
Yeah, kind of dog-eat-dog.
Yeah.
Well, he also got news that the Midnuskis, as he calls them, had killed three of the neighboring tribe, the Colchina, and war was likely. Bremner describes that he thinks this will be a short war because neither side had much powder or ball. They also almost entirely were armed with old Hudson Bay flintlocks still.
Wow.
At this time. A few days later, it rained so hard that there was a foot of water in his cabin. John notes that he didn't expect rain. He thought it'd be cold, so he hadn't put as much time in waterproofing the cabin as he should have. On the 18th, an alarm was raised that the Colchina were coming, and everyone old enough to handle a gun went upriver. They eventually negotiated peace without further casualties. So Christmas passed uneventfully, and around New Year's, snow started again at the rate of about 8 inches per day for several days, with a lot of wind to go with it. It became very cold in mid-January. Bremner had to make a trip to attend to a sick native woman. He had cured himself of a couple of things by taking some pills. The natives had taken note of that and thought he was quite a medicine man. When he got to the village, he arrived and a funeral was starting for another woman who had died. For some reason, John removed her face covering to take a look at her, and while he was bent over looking at her, her eyes popped open. So now they believe John's just raised a woman from the dead when it turns out she probably had some type of an illness that simply caused seizures in a catatonic state.
Yeah. Wow.
But with that, he had sort of a new status among the people that he was living with, certainly.
Fairbanks, we are going to take a break right now. We're going to give you some bumper music. I approve this. It's War Lowrider. I've never heard Lowrider bumper music, but I can't wait. We're going to have some Fox News, some state news, some commercials that will not have any political ad campaigns in them, some weather, and we'll be back.
Pro.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger says the U.S. Senate race between Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker is heading for a runoff election on December 6th.
Our office has already begun the behind-scenes work to start building the ballots. So ballots are being built as we speak, and counties are making preparations.
Georgia requires a candidate to get more than 50% of the votes cast to avert a runoff. Basketball star Brittany Griner, sentenced in Russia to 9 years in prison for drug possession, has been moved to a penal colony.
Even Brittany Griner's legal team doesn't know her exact current whereabouts. The two-time Olympic gold medalist said she made an honest mistake trying to enter Moscow with vape cartridges containing cannabis oil. The White House has called her detention wrong.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
A Republican is expected to hold Alaska's U.S. Senate seat following Tuesday's ranked choice election, with Donald Trump endorsed Kelly Schiavacca and U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, a fellow Republican, leading in early returns. Tabulation rounds in the ranked vote election are expected to be held November 23rd. The race also included Democrat Pat Chesbro and Republican Buzz Kelly, who trailed Schiavacca and Murkowski. Kelly suspended his campaign in September and endorsed Schiavacca. In other election news, voters were deciding if Alaska should hold a constitutional convention for the first time since the original convention in the 1950s. The measure was failing, according to early vote results in Tuesday's election. The ballot question, put to voters once every decade in the past, has generated little notice and failed in lopsided votes. But there was a renewed push by supporters of a convention this year. They were buoyed by public anger over the grueling legislative fights over what size the annual check paid to residents from the state's oil well fund should be. Opponents of a convention say it's too risky.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Freeze your fat away without surgery or downtime with Cool Sculpting, an FDA-approved, non-surgical, cool way to treat muffin top, belly fat, bra, leg, and chin fat. The only Cool Sculpting in Interior Alaska is Solstice Medicine and Wellness. From your chin to your legs, don't just fight the fat, freeze it. Cool Sculpting makes fitting into your favorite fashions an attainable goal. You owe it to yourself to look your best. Call for your free consultation. Call Solstice Medicine and Wellness, 907-456-6334, 907-456-6334. 6334.
Hello, Fairbanks. It's John Scherzer from the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center. Thanksgiving is right around the corner. Let us make it easy on you. Let our team of chefs do all the work. The Westmark is offering a Thanksgiving buffet with seatings between 11 and 3 on Thursday, November 24th. The menu includes delicious roasted turkey, carved ham, salad bar, mashed potatoes, stuffing, green beans casserole, cranberry sauce, yams, vegetable medley, rolls, and a full dessert bar, which includes our chef's selection of cookies, pastries, assorted cakes, and my favorite, pumpkin pie. All that for $39 per adult and $20 per child. Call 459-7739 and make your reservation. Seating is limited, so call today. That's Thanksgiving Buffet at the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center. Call 459-7739 and start the holiday season with the Westmark.
Ho, 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 ho. Santa's elves have been busy, and they're ready to help you get a big jump on your holiday shopping this weekend at the Holiday Marketplace. There'll be over 175 mini specialty shops with one-of-a-kind gifts. With so many items and vendors, there's bound to be something for everyone on your list. This is guaranteed to be the perfect place to find all of your holiday shopping gifts in one single location. So come out to the Holiday Marketplace this weekend at the Carlson Center. The Holiday Marketplace, sponsored by TNT Enterprise and the radio station.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
You know, Nick, it's interesting. We're coming into a different stage of winter. We're past Halloween, past the elections, and now it's time to start ramping up for the holidays. Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. We're already getting them this weekend, Holiday Marketplace.
Yes,
at the Carlson Center.
Been going on for a while. We had a neighbor who used to put her Christmas tree up on Halloween, the day after, actually, and she would take it down on Good Friday.
Well, Perry Wally. Yeah, I'm throwing upper management under the bus. He doesn't put up Halloween things. He puts up Christmas tree things. He puts up Christmas for Halloween. So all the trick-or-treaters come up to his house, you know, here's Christmas, ready to go.
I like that. That gets you, you get to do it at a warmer time of year and you're ready to go.
He does live in the city of North Pole.
That's true.
That gene pool infection might have gotten to him.
Very possibly. Well, John, at this point on the 7th of February, describes a really huge eruption of Mount Wrangell, throwing ejecta into the air that was so large he could see it from 30 miles away, and that it went on all night and then smoked for several days. His diary stops just after this, and the little addendum is something he ended up writing and giving to Lieutenant Allen, and it was nothing but pretty much naturalistic observations of what was going on in the country around him during the winter. Well, the next section then, where most people will have heard of John, is when he meets up with Lieutenant Allen, who has just come up the copper and is on his way, as we know, to explore the copper, the Tanana, the Koyukuk, and then eventually head back, one of the longer, with the exception of Lewis and Clark, possibly the longest Army exploration.
All in one season.
In an amazing short time.
Yeah.
1,500 miles. Well, he tells us, Alan Tarl, the metropolis of the Copper River country, was saluted by us at the urgent request of our friends at a distance of about 400 yards. The natives had spoken very much of a man named John, the prospector, and they expressed fear that famine had overtaken him. The answer to our salute was many rounds fired by the locals and then a single shot. And finally, at the edge of the bluff above us, one man, one woman, and two children appeared. The man was John, certainly the most uncouth specimen of manhood that I had up to that time ever seen. He was a picture of wretchedness, destitution, and despair suddenly rendered happy. John was reduced to a single round of powder, which he fired in answer to us, supposing the long-absent natives were returning alone from Nuchuk. So that's how most people know John. He's just spent a winter eating nothing but rabbits. His clothing are falling off and...
looks wretched and unhappy. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And the most uncouth specimen I had ever seen. That kind of sums him up. Well, he then, Alan talks a little bit about it and mentions how he'd been living on the rabbits he had snared and occasionally with a piece of dried salmon as a luxury. He says that John had been shortening his belt one hole every other day. At one time, he declared the rabbits to have been very scarce, and with starvation was basically looking him in the face. And he said, this is a fact recorded in John's diary. He said, nowhere did I ever receive such a warm greeting as at Tarl from this naturally heroic specimen of manhood, then so depressed with hunger and destitution.
Oh, goodness.
So it gets kind of wordy and verbose. But
yeah.
But you can just imagine John must have, his reaction to seeing a party of white people and that he knew he could communicate with and who had supplies would have been pretty amazing. So one of the things that he tells us is John ate 4 pounds of meat in a single day and barely had
quite
his...
quite hungry.
Barely had his hunger satisfied.
Oh, my goodness.
Well... they went up the, John had ascended the Copper River then the year before and was decided he would go with Allen's party because he thought he'd be better off with them. And so they took him on. That only added to their party of five, the three soldiers, a prospector, and John, the second prospector. And Allen wanted to continue to talk to John and see what it was he had learned about that part of the Copper River country. John had many years of experience. It said he was a practical miner, and he was disposed to consider the prospects for minerals around. He was eager to visit the Copper River region, which would have been actually the Chittenden. Mm-hmm. And so they thought that was the Copper River at first that went up toward the mountains, which it wasn't. And they just kind of discuss a little bit. It discusses a little bit about John's observations of the mineral industries of the area or the potential.
He had the first view.
He did.
He had the first view. So
it wasn't until Lane and his people came in around 1912 that the copper prospects really began to be noticed. Well, of course, by that time, the electrification of the eastern U.S. was going on. So copper really wasn't just something, well, yeah, we can use it. It was a commodity.
Yeah.
Well, he had this small cabin that Alan describes, and they were building a boat. So the boat was a little bit greater than what they could pull up the river as they got into the upper stretches of the copper. So it turns out John was pretty clever with boats and took their boat and modified it, made it smaller and lighter, and actually improved on its design to go on upriver. So, like I say, he had a lot of skills. You know, probably the time he was a sailor brought that in.
Yeah.
On May 30th, he tells us the water temperature there, way up in the, getting out of the Copper River drainage at this point, and said the temperature of the water is 43 degrees. Course is northeast. Said, we arrived at an Indian house at 11 a.m. hungry. Abandoned the boat. The Indians gave us a dinner of boiled meat, from which John scraped the maggots by handfuls before cutting it up. He said it tasted good, maggots and all. He said, in this place I noticed the severe hardships to which Bremner had so long been exposed were affecting both his mental and physical constitution. His ankle, sprained on the Chittenden, had assumed an unusual size, which was due, we found later, to scurvy. On reaching Nuklukyet, July 26, they said, I found to my surprise Sergeant Robinson and John in critical condition from scurvy, and Thickert and Pete looking as though they were suffering from severe sickness. So they did. He doesn't write too much about John from the time they hit Tanana to when they got to, would have been Tanana Cross to the time they hit Tanana. But John did end up suffering most of that winter from the effects of a year of eating basically nothing but fish or rabbit, and it just wasn't a good diet for him. Well, his last member point is, Alan says, Bremner, a miner who passed the winter at 1884-85 at Tarl, told us much about the winter conditions during that, and I have appended his descriptions to my report. So he separates from Alan. He and another partner decided they would go ahead. Peterson, the original prospector who'd be with them, decided that they would, now that they were on the Yukon, go up and see what the Koyukuk country was like. But they didn't do that for a year or so. They took them a while to recover. The end of the trail for John is described in two separate parts of the book Sourdough Sagas. In Jim Bender's saga, Bender arrived in Juneau 1886 and had traveled to Dyea, across the range to the 40-mile country, then Franklin Creek. They were only able to make $17.50 a day, which wouldn't keep them going. Well, that fall, they left for the 70-mile, and after a week, they decided to make Nuklukyet, which is spelled, let me see, how do you spell it? He spelled it very new something. I'm sorry. John was there at what is, we'll just call the site of Tanana now. And this would have been the fall of 1885. So they spent the winter of 1887 and 1888 with 14 prospectors. They had their freight hauled over to Old Man's River on the Koyukuk drainage. They proceeded to Old John's River, which was actually named after Bremner. It had a different name at the time, where they made preparations for travel on the river by boat. Well, while they were heading, having a meal, Bremner was by himself, and he wandered into camp and said he had basically little or no food, as he had given some to the natives. They offered to make John a boat and give him some grub, and according to Bender, they did so that he would, hoping he would go downriver and they'd be rid of him. Bremner had a rifle and a shotgun. The latter was an old cap and ball. Well, he went downriver, per Bender's account, and there he stopped and took time to make tea and fry a duck. He shared that meal with a young native and an older man, old man, a shaman, who had come by. And while Bremner was putting the cooking items away and repacking the boat, he was shot by the young native at the old man's insistence, who had basically told him, there are very few white people here. We can shoot this one, be rid of him, and have all of his supplies. So that's what happened. On July 4th, Bender's party was camped about 4 miles below and on the opposite side of the river. A group of natives came downriver and stayed for a while. The following day, as the party was breaking camp, a native came down with a note from Mrs. Callahan's first husband, who was half Russian and could write fairly well. And the note told the story of the killing of Bremner. And the party made for Nulato. They decided to get out of the country where it was everything was being worked up.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255, and we'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
I'm John Washington, and I want to be elected as your...
If you had Milwaukee, DeWalt, or Makita cordless tools from Denali Industrial, you could have ignored the political commercials and been building something. Let's get back to helping neighbors with projects around their house. Or asking a neighbor not about their political beliefs, but if they have an extra 10-millimeter socket because you've lost yours. Ask your neighbor, your fellow Fairbanks, and your fellow American if they'd like to take a ride with you to Denali Industrial, 1499 Van Horn Road.
Expressway Auto reminds you that when you change over your tires this season, that you ask them about getting an alignment for your vehicle. Whether two- or four-wheel drive, your ride will benefit with less tire wear and longer life for your treads. In addition, Expressway now offers a full selection of tires for your car, light truck, and SUV from Yokohama, Nokian, and Toyo, so there's no better time to get everything done all in one place. Expressway Auto, your Napa Car Care Center, stands behind what they do with their 36-month, 36,000-mile warranty. Call for your appointment today, 888-659-0631. Expressway Auto in North Pole.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Weather brought to you by the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eyes connect you to your world. Care for them with the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks, your eye health professionals on Mini Street.
KFAR Weather.
Overcast skies this afternoon with snow showers likely. High of 22, northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Chance of snow, lows level off around 14. Snow likely again tomorrow, highs level off around 21. About an inch of snow today through tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent in the studio with me here, and we're going through John Bremner and his life and times in Alaska and a little bit before. But now we come to an interesting point, because back then in Alaska, it was miners' law.
Absolutely. And what the miners decided was the law that was carried out.
Yeah.
We can switch over to Gordon Bettle's account, which is also found in Sourdough Sagas. Mm-hmm. And he was telling the story of what he called some early Yukon River history. The first prospectors that he mentions were Shefflin brothers with the steamer the New Racket in 1881. They remained till 1883. The next two prospectors in the area were Pedder Johnson, and John Bremner, who landed at Nicolayuk in the fall of 1886. They had been with Allen, left, got resupplied, kind of recovered, came back in the fall of 86, overwintered so they could get an early start the next year.
Ready for a phone call?
I am.
Good morning. You're on KFA Radio with Nick Nugent. Your name is? Hello? Hold on. Ah, that's me. Good morning. You're on KFA Radio, and your name is?
Good morning. This is Al.
Well, I've got all the right buttons on. Hold on. Good morning. You're on KFA Radio, and your name is?
Good morning. This is Al.
Hello, Al. We got you. Okay, we got you.
Oh, nice. It strikes me kind of odd that, you know, they had the ability to snare hares and eat fish, and I'm wondering why they weren't trying to snare beavers and lynx.
John never mentions lynx. I don't know if there was a shortage of them in the area or not, but he does at one point mention that they had eaten some beaver. Perhaps he just didn't have the skill set to know how to set out beaver traps.
Oh, because that would have been a much richer meat than hares.
And who are we talking to, Al? That's in your fiefdom, my friend.
Yeah.
You have a great morning. Talk to you soon.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Well, they hoped then to get an outfit from the traders Walker and Fredericks. They traveled cross-country in the spring of 1887, a distance of 200 miles to the Koyukuk. In the summer, they traveled up the Koyukuk and found good color in several bars, Tramway Bar being one of them. They returned to Nakluckyet and wintered there. In the spring, they traveled along their previous course and were accompanied by John Folger, Harry Davis, who's another name that shows up a lot in our early times, Ernest Chapman, John Hughes, and John Minook, the discoverer of gold at Rampart. Bremner decided he wanted to cover more territory, so he and Pete built a smaller boat and Bremner set off. Shortly, he came up a large tributary, which is now known as John's River. He dropped down the Dolby, it's called Dolby here, but the Dubai, where Bremner stopped for lunch. The smoke from his fire attracted the couple, and then the story is slightly different details, but basically that John was shot, killed, and his body was thrown in the river. When Bremner didn't return, Johnson and John Minook set off to look for him. And Bettle says it was through Minook that the murder was discovered. A larger contingent of miners had arrived, and they took the news, obviously, very badly. And Lieutenant Stoney happened to come along. Remember, Joni and I talked about Stoney for a bit and his voyages of discovery. Well, he was coming up the Yukon in the New Racket, which the miners group commandeered and went off to find the murderer of poor John Bremner. One of the things they thought the show of force was needed, a few years prior, the natives had killed Mrs. Bean. She and her husband had been fur traders on the Tanano, and they were thinking, oh, if this starts to become a habit, we can't, you know, be out here alone. We got to stop it. Well, they set off to seek and hang the responsible parties. A party of 22 went up the Koyukuk to the camp where the murderers were living. Everybody was frightened at the sight of a steamer. They really hadn't seen one before. They all jumped off, surrounded the village, and the two murderers confessed, well, the young man did, and that the old man had been with him. The old man, when asked, told them that the old man hadn't shot Bremner. He was so afraid of him as a shaman, he wouldn't implicate him. So the miners took a vote and said, should we hang both of them or one of them? And they didn't have a majority, so they only hung the young man. And then they told everybody at the other villages what they had done and why. This led to a feud between the shaman's family and the young man's family. They killed the shaman and three of his family members over the next few years. Judge Wickersham mentions that in his book, Old Yukon. So the feud lasted for a while and actually ended up with the deaths of six people. In Bremner's later time, well, this later years, you know, he kind of was right on the edge of maybe having had some good discoveries. They were in the right part of the country. They were in the Koyukuk, where a lot of good mining properties were found later. No additional details in a search of newspapers after 1900. Looking back articles,
yeah,
you'll see Bremner and
coming in, popping up,
filled in some bits and pieces. Bremner has descendants. Per the Bremner family history, John took a Native American wife with whom he had a son, John Bremner III, born about 1882. This son was part of the Galax-Caguanta Eagle Clan. The son married Mary Johns. They had five children and lived in Catella. A daughter, Susie, was featured in the periodical We Alaskans with the title When I Was Young on the story. A great-granddaughter, Elaine, was a registered nurse and worked in Bethel and Sitka. She established the Southeast Alaska Native Health Aid Program and Native Board of Health. She held positions at Sheldon Jackson and was a vice president at the University of Alaska. Some of Bremner's descendants actually did much better than John did. So, John on the map. These are all from the Dictionary of Alaska Place Names. A small town of Bremner on the right hand of the Copper River, 55 miles north of Catella, local place name for a station on the Copper River and Northwestern Railroad. The Bremner Glacier, which ahead at 60 degrees 51 minutes, it's 8 miles in length. The terminus in 1950 was at the head of the North Fork of the Bremner River, 22 miles east-northeast of Cordova. That turns out to be a very rich mineral area. So the Bremner River has not been seen by a lot of people, but there should have been more interest in it. It was just very, very hard to get to, very remote. Finally, Bremner River, which heads at the junction of the North and Middle Forks and flows southwest 40 miles to the Copper River. John River, formed by contact Inukpasguruk Creeks, it flows south 125 miles from Anaktuvik Pass to the Koyukuk. It comes into the Koyukuk 1 mile northeast of Bettles. Wow. It was originally called the Thicket River by Lieutenant Allen. Then, after Bremner's death, it was first called the Old John, and since about 1898, just simply the John River.
Okay. Well, that was thank you for the presentation. And Phil, you know, fills in a lot of blanks and a lot of overlay, you know, in that area before Lieutenant Allen.
It does, and it also, when you look at the various parties and where they went, some of these unknown people were the reasons more well-known prospectors went where they did and found gold.
We're just about done. What are we doing next month?
I think we'll do the Aleutians. That's the war in the Aleutians during the Second World War. That's a subject we haven't covered much. There were a couple of, as well as the well-known battle at Attu, there was a very major naval engagement took place without aircraft due to the weather.
Yeah.
It was one of the last of the gun-to-gun ship battles.
Nick, thank you very much for the presentation. Greatly appreciate it. Fairbanks, that is our show for today. You have a great day, and I will see you on Friday.